Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's
Each week, they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff, too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay, so let's, hi again, everybody. Jungle Jim Jerome coming out with another episode of The Suspendables. We do it each and every week, me and Rusty.
We're doing it early today. You can tell Jimmy just rolled out of bed. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. Listen, pal.
thinks he's a freaking rock star.
I got some advice from one of my guys. He said, listen, when you start the show, Jerome, you're yapping too much. Bring Rusty on right away.
Yeah.
Okay, bring him on right away.
Finally, somebody with some sense.
Where's the White Claw? There it is.
Already opened.
Another empty. What are we going to talk about this week, Rusty? Playoffs, of course, are right in the middle. Montreal is the biggest surprise of anybody.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Are you loving it now? Toronto's out, so you're watching Montreal. How are they doing it?
That's the good news when you play for so many teams, when your team loses out, you know, you get another one. So I got Montreal now. As my old team and Carey Price, and the team is getting better by the game, by the period. They're getting more confident, and they're not near the team they were when they started the playoffs.
Right.
And they are just gaining confidence and playing great. And some guys are obviously getting healthier as the series goes on, with Gallagher being one. And Carey Price is doing a great job, and you got to give Marc Bergevin full credit now, because he fired the coach, hired the interim coach, fired the goalie coach, and brought in Sean Burke and to help out there with Carey. And Carey Price is one of the best, if not the best, goalie in the world, especially when he's healthy.
Right.
And that they're playing great in front of him, but they don't need much in offense, because he's shutting the door.
Right. What are they doing around Carey? You always hear stories, Rusty, from teams, you know, talking about goaltenders. You know, the fun thing always is, you know, you always hear someone go, what's that guy like? You know, you go, well, he's a goaltender, so he's crazy, you know.
Different. They're different.
He's different.
Kirk McLean's nickname was weird.
Yeah. Well, every goaltender's nickname was weird. Don't touch him. He's going good. Okay. When he's going really good, no one talk to him. Okay, don't look at him. Don't do anything in the dressing room. Talk about that, Rusty, in your day when you had a goalie going good. Some of the shit that would come down.
Well, if you know, when you play the position on your team that when the puck crosses the red line, you're the last person to make a mistake. Everybody's
right.
Looking at you, so they're going to be affected. Mentally, in a way, none of the other players are, and they've been doing this their whole lives. So good on the goalies, and they have to be a little different to accept that every game, that when it goes across the line, it's their, you know, it's they're the last person to make a mistake.
Awful.
Had some absolute beauties. Darcy Wakaluk when he backed up for John Casey and Minnesota and Dallas, when he wasn't playing, he'd play with a coat hanger, and he'd just flip it around looking at this thing. And then John Carey was like in La La Land, and then it would switch. They would be like, you know, carefree when they're not playing. And it got to the point where they separated the goalies. We always had a roommate when I played. And then finally they started separating them, because day of a game, the guy who wasn't playing would be watching all the TV shows during the afternoon. The guy was starting, couldn't get any sleep. So they each had to get their own room. but there is some funny, I saw Patrick Waugh absolutely lose his mind looking for something, and he was swearing in French. And I asked, Stefan Richer, who was sitting beside me, I go, what's he looking for? What's wrong? And he goes, he can't find his lucky puck. and he used to bounce this puck into his catching mitt off the cement floor, the, you know, dressing room floor. And he had this puck that it was, had to go with him. And I didn't even realize it.
Find the puck. Find the puck.
Oh yeah, Patrick. Find the puck. Tabernacles de Colors. And then John Casey. I've mentioned this before. I'll it deserves one more. We're in Tampa, right at the early expansion, and we're winning 3-0 after two. We should probably be winning 8-0 because back then the expansion team sucked.
Right.
And he gave up a puck. Like he loved to play the puck, and it drove Bob Gainey crazy. Right. And he fired up a pizza, and they picked it off, and he had to dive out in front and make a save. And so in between the second and third, Gainey comes in, and he's just screaming at Casey. And we're all silent, and Casey stands up and kind of challenges him to go, well, it's fucking 3-0, Bob. It's 3-0. They haven't scored a goal. It's 3-0. And Bob walks out of the room, and I couldn't help myself. And as soon as Bob walked out of the room, and I go, but, hey, John, that was a hell of a pass.
Right.
Anyways, goalies are interesting, but you got to have them. And when you got one hot like Price, man, you can go all the way.
Leave him alone. Nobody touch him. Nobody get in the way. Marty Brodeur, I remember when they showed him like his pre-game routine. He'd be by himself. He'd be at the rink about 9 hours ahead of everyone.
Yeah.
You know, because they got to stretch their ass off, right? These goalies, right? They got to go all day. And then he'd be on the rink and he'd have just standing in his running shoes, you know, his long johns, and he'd have a goalie stick with a puck on it, and he could throw it up in the air and then let it land onto the blade of the stick again without it bouncing off. Right. And I'm like, what an incredible talent. Right? And I said, I got to ask Rusty, there must be some guys you knew, whether it was hockey talents or other stuff, that were really good, man, at something that would just knock your socks off, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of good hockey players, for example, are good golfers, but you must have seen some shit that you're going, how are you good at that?
The first guy I ever saw to juggle the puck on a stick was Gary Lehman, who we've had on the show, my teammate, line mate from the Hound Line in Toronto. Probably the best athlete, all round athlete I've ever seen, him, Steve Nash, and Wayne Gretzky. I mean, Gary Lehman. He met a girl in Toronto his first year, second year maybe. They started dating. She lived on a golf course. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a golfer. By the end of the summer, 3 months, he was a scratch golfer. Guy's freaking unbelievable.
Right.
He came out to Sherwood in 2013 for the Breeders' Cup. Stayed with me. Never seen Sherwood before. He's playing off a 4 handicap, and he shot 68.
Gary Lee.
First time seeing Sherwood. Yeah, we didn't make any friends that day. We were teammates, and I had a hole in one, and we won every bet. And then we lost it at the track.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Never enough on a winner.
But, you know, there's some really talented, obviously, you know, some great athletes that play other sports that are hockey players and vice versa. You know,
I'll tell you a great story about gambling.
Never start off with a story saying, here's a great one.
Yeah. Well, I got to do that.
Why don't you let us be the judge of that, Hammerhead?
Well, I have to say that because you've been a little flat. I got to admit, the last couple of weeks. Okay. Yeah. You've been a little suspect. Okay. So I got to bring it. Craig McTavish and
here comes the great story from the great Houdini.
When I moved here in 85, I joined a golf course, the Edmonton Country Club.
What year?
1985.
Okay. I'm trying to get the mode. Get into the mode.
Okay.
Of your joke, your great joke, your great story, whatever the fuck you're going to tell us.
So I joined a golf course. A bunch of the others played there. We had a riot, but the action was big. Okay. The action was big. If you know, they played what they called the triple game. So it was you team up with a guy, partners. So it's best ball, aggregate, and high low. Okay. Mm-hmm. So those are three different games. It was like $10 a game, automatic presses, and they played a game called Vegas. Okay.
Oh, so, I hate that game. I don't hate anything, but I do not like that fucking game.
Well, it's a heavy game. If you and I are 4-4 and those guys are 5-5, 44 against 55 is 11, and they play $5 a point. Well, there's $55.
Okay. Yep.
So him and I get in this game. I never minded the games too much. I said, whatever it is, I was a good player at the time. Mm-hmm. And not a fast car.
You could leave the parking lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So be right back.
Not only do you play against the guys who are in your group, but you're matching cards with every other guy. And there'll be 8, 10, 12 guys out there, right? Three groups and stuff.
Oh my God.
So if you go good, you're gonna collect. Anyway, I'm playing in this game. One of the other guys in the group is the father of my girlfriend. And he's looking at me going, what are you doing in this freaking game? You know, this.
Yeah, you don't have a job, Jimmy.
Anyway, we get going good. I shot the lowest round of my life, okay, as a 4 handicap or something when I was. I shoot 68. Jeez. Mac T is a 12, and he shoots 77. Oof. And we don't really know that we said we agreed to the games, whatever they are. You know, well, who cares what they are? It is what it is. Just tell me what I owe, right, as everyone always says. Anyway, at the end of the day, you know, a guy comes over, he goes, yeah, I did the cards, we matched the cards, and whips off 800. And we go, and I think at the time, and so does Mac T, going, nice grab. We nailed everyone. We grab everyone for a couple of 400
each.
Yeah. Right. Okay, that was one group. Okay? I'm not shitting you. I sit there, another guy comes over, he goes, oh my God, you nailed us. Here's 9. Okay? Right? Okay. Bang, 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 bang. 3,700.
Oh my God, in 85.
Yeah, in 1980, big dough, big dough. There was like, we won, I don't know, we won over $4,000, okay? So all the guys go, well, we're just heading over for dinner, you know, at the sawmill. Mm-hmm. And we go in there, yeah, sure, let us, you know, grab you guys a drink at least, right? And the guy goes, yeah. Anyway, it only happened once in all the years I played in that game that they actually went for dinner after, and Mac T and I get nailed for 2,800. On the dinner bill, okay?
Right? How much?
$2,800. They get us, right? Because we won $4,000. Oh. And they're ordering everything. And I think, you know, the bill comes, they're all gone. And it's already on our deal. And we paid for it, you know? And so we got absolutely crushed after. They were pissed that we sandbagged.
Right, right. You
know?
Yeah.
So don't ever do it, you know? Yeah. Don't ever do it. But anyway, I love those days.
Oh, my God. We'll get you. We'll get you.
Exactly.
We used to have these, well, they still have them, the rookie dinners. And then when the guys start signing the big contracts in my era, which meant you got $1 million, I think you had to average $1 million a year, close to it. And you were supposed to take the boys out for dinner. So right. Mark Tenorti, he didn't really like throwing around the dollars. Mark's a great guy. I love him to death. Great player and a friend. But he was a little cheap. So we kept teasing him like, hey, Mark, when are you going to take the team out? When are you going to take the team out? So we're in Annapolis and we're there for a few days. Bob Gainey liked to take us away to stay on the road for a few days and practice and bond. And
right.
So we go out for dinner and it is the cheapest restaurant I've ever been to on the road. Like nothing was over $10.
Oh,
and I'm like, there was no wine list. And if there was wine, you wouldn't drink it. And
right.
So we're all looking at each other like, oh my God, Tenor, unbelievable. Like you could have taken us to like frick the keg or something. I mean, this place sucks.
Right.
Of the burger. And so I went to the bathroom and as I'm walking by the front door, I notice they have a clothing shop.
Right.
With all these t-shirts and hats and coffee mugs and jackets. So I said to the lady, send everybody a t-shirt and a hat. And if they want a mug, just put everything on our bill. Tinner got the bill and he was like, you freaking asshole. And we were all walking around with these shitty t-shirts on and hats.
That is so funny.
So we got him on the bill, kind of the same way those golfers got you guys.
Right. You know, the other good move I saw with buddies is, you know, they always went out for Christmas dinner. They met once a week, big, you know, group of guys, 12. Never do this, Rusty, okay? Never do this because it's taboo that you would. So the waitress comes and one of the guys says, I'll get it. You know, I'll get the bill today. Mm-hmm. And in front of the waitress, one of his buddies sort of goes, make sure it's Christmas time, Bill. Make sure you give her a couple hundred, eh? While the waitress is there, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes, Jesus, you know.
Yeah, thanks.
She walks away and he goes, don't you ever do that again. Right. Okay. Don't ever do that again. Anyway, he ends up giving her 300 or something, right? It's Christmas.
Well, you hang out with a good crowd of wealthy guys. What happened to you?
Okay, what he does, okay, to get the guy back the next time they go. Okay. The dude who bugged Billy about leaving the big tip, Billy said, I'll get you. One day I will get you. He gets up to go for a leak. The guy has a suit jacket there. Bill reaches in.
Bill Comrie?
Grabs the guy's credit card.
Is it Bill Comrie?
It's Billy Comrie. Grabs the guy's credit card out of his suit jacket.
Oh, boy.
And then the bill comes and Billy goes, I'll get it.
Oh, no.
I'll get it. And he gets the bill and he says to Tim, the guy who gave him the, you know, the shot about the 200, he goes, what should I give her, Timmy, today, right? And he goes, well, I don't know, Bill. I don't, you know, I guess probably 100 and a half or something like that. And Billy goes, you know what? I feel good. Let's give her $1,000. Okay. Timmy goes, oh, wow. Well, then why don't you make it $2,000 if you're going to do that? He goes, great idea. Sign the thing. Okay. Gets him for $2,000. Oh, best move ever.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Rusty, what about Nathan MacKinnon coming out and saying, I'll take less money to stay with the team?
He said that a couple years ago.
What do you think of that, Russ?
I think it's great he's saying it, but at the same time, I'm thinking, Nathan, you know what? You deserve to make what you deserve to get paid, and how much less are you going to take that it's really going to help the team?
Right.
I think it's going to help Nathan MacKinnon over the course of his lifetime more than by taking the most amount of money he can make than giving back whatever he's going to give back to the team. Whatever less he's going to take, it's not going to benefit the team as much as it will over his lifetime.
Why do you say that?
Because he can't give $10 million back a year. I mean, what is he going to do? Give him $1 million? So what can they afford for $1 million? What kind of player?
Oh, I see.
That million's going to mean more to him than it is. And I think it's admirable what he's doing, but I think he doesn't need to say it anymore. So.
Do you think, Rusty, I was talking with Stevie this morning. When I hear that, you know, a big player, the guy makes, I don't know, $6 million, I think now he's probably going to re-sign for 10, right? Mm-hmm. People are saying he's the best player in the league, right? So whether that's true or not, if you're in the conversation, a $10 million guy. What's the unions think, Rusty, when they see that? Because my thought is the union might come up, you know, phone them and go, what are you doing, moron? Mm-hmm. You know, our deal is to try and get guys the most money we can. Don't do that.
But they have a salary cap, so there's nothing, it doesn't matter really. I mean, some of their other union players are going to get more money because he's going to give back some money, but those players will benefit, but it's not going to change the salary cap.
So right.
The ceiling's the ceiling. So I think McDavid did it in Edmonton. I think he took less. I think he took 2 million. He took,
right.
I know it was a couple million he took less than what they negotiated. So
it just seems to me to start up, you know, that other players are looking at him going, okay, now that you did that, fuck, do I have to do it? You know, on the same team.
Well, players have been doing it. I mean, and they'll, I know, I've known players have done things to help out the owners. Like Mary Lemieux was deferring money to help out the owner. And then he ended up getting the team when they went bankrupt. But
right.
Players have been doing it for a long time, trying to help where they can. But I think it's great that he's saying it and he's unselfish and he wants to win. He loves his teammates. I think it's great. I think it's a positive thing. I don't think it, I don't think the association would say, his union would say anything to him, because he, you know, he's going to make what he's going to make.
Right.
It's not going to hurt. He's only, it's only changing him. And then maybe a couple other players they can afford to keep, you know, if they need 500, say takes 2 million less and they got two really good players and they got to get them an extra million a year. Well, that, then it makes sense, but that's all that's how I would figure it.
Right. Right. There was a great story, you know, Brett Schnedeker, right? The guy who plays in the PGA Tour. The big deal with that, when that FedEx Cup came along, which nobody understands the way they get points and how it works. But what everyone understands now is you get 15 mil, okay? If you win that thing at the end of the year, you're familiar with that, right, Russ?
Mm-hmm. FedEx Cup? Yeah.
Brett Schnedeker won $10 million when it first came out. I think it was 5 mil, and then
it's 20.
Oh, it's way up there. It just keeps going crazy. And the whole idea was them to get guys interested in golf after the major. The last major, no one would watch TV anymore, right? It was like, okay, British Open's done. Anyway, Schnedeker gave a bunch of the money back.
Like, no.
He came out and said, you know what? It's too much money. players were looking at him going, I'm going to murder you, dude, you know?
Jeez.
But you'll see it from time to time.
And
anyway, you bring up the interesting side of the salary cap going, you're not really going to help anybody any, you know?
Yeah.
It's not.
Now that we're on golf, we got to talk about Koepka and, what is it, DeChambeau, where on the weekend they were chanting Brooksy.
Right.
Cause they've got a feud going, right? The two golfers.
They do. Yeah, they do.
And then did you see Koepka came out and said, for anyone who is inconvenienced this weekend and maybe their time was cut short at the tournament because they were cheering for my name, and I appreciate that, I've teamed up with Michelob Ultra, and we're going to send 52 cases of beer to the first 50, or maybe it's 50 cases to the first 50 people who DM are your information if you've been, you know, cut short of watching the tournament, because they were kicking people out for mocking the other guy with his name. Oh my God. So I'm at on Saturday night, had a really good night Friday with Andrew Whitworth and his family.
Russ, just to interrupt before you go on, if you didn't see it, the backstory was Brooks Koepka was giving an interview a couple weeks ago, standing in the mic, you know, the social distance, so he's just there. And Bryson DeChambeau, while he's doing his interview, walks behind him with his metal spikes on a paved park. And it made a bunch of noise. And Brooks Koepka kind of rolls his eyes. And I didn't realize they had a feud until then, rolls his eyes and goes, oh, man, how much of this bullshit do we have to put up with? You know, and I don't know if you saw it, Russ, or... And Brooks said, I've lost my train of thought. I can't believe this guy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. He rolled his eyes. He was pissed.
So you caught the real scene there. You
know, and they played that over and over and over. It's good to see golf with a little bit of FU.
Little moxie.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted there.
That's okay. That game needs a little something, talk. Something for everybody to see instead of this polite crap.
Right.
Oh, good shot. No, good shot.
Right.
No, you go first.
Anyway, you were talking about you were playing golf or something somewhere.
So Andrew Whitworth, number 77 for the Rams, has become a friend. And my wife's an interior designer and has a construction company. And she's redone their entire house now in their backyard, and he's a neighbor. So he just lives about a block away, and they don't have a pool and they have four kids. So I invited them to come over Friday. Why don't you come over for a swim? Bring the kids.
Right.
And it turned into Uncle Russ was making hot dogs, and then we ordered in dinner and we drank wine, and oh my God, we were just having the best time. And he and I were laughing about this back and forth with Koepka.
Right.
And, is it DeChambeau? Am I saying it right? DeChambeau.
Yeah,
DeChambeau. And so he and I were just having fun, and he was playing videos, and we had a great night. And Saturday, I had an all-day track event for our daughter, and I was a little hungover and it was hot out. And so I get home, I'm wheels, feet up on the couch, and right. I get a text. The boys are coming over from Whitworth. He goes, having a few of the boys over. Why don't you come over? I know you're tired, but come over for a drink.
You so I went over. Though, right?
Oh yeah, said, I did. No, I got no, freaking got up like in 2 seconds. Told him what to, I said, I need a corrector. So I went over there and had a corrector. Yeah, corrector. That's, my buddy calls the hangover drink a corrector.
Right.
So I went over and Matt Stafford was there, the new quarterback for the Rams, right. And Cooper Kupp. And right. Paris right. happens to be doing Cooper's house too. So I'm in because of Paris with the right. boys. And then a few baseball dads, because they're all coaching baseball, their kids in baseball. And it's great how kids bring these adults together. So there's all sure. these guys around and we're hanging out and telling more stories. And we just had a fun night. And then I was first to leave. Can you believe it?
No.
Yeah. No. I was the first one to leave. Andrew goes, I can't believe you're leaving. You never leave first. I right. go, I got to go. I got to go. But right. It was a great night, and they're for the football fans out there. They're fired up about their team. They're really fired up.
All right,
like well, Super Bowl fired up.
We're NFL, man. We're NFL because you're. Is there a date set with your daughter Allie and Eric are engaged? When's the wedding? When do we get to go? I'm gonna me.
Hey. In July of 2022, they're getting married in Napa, and they told me the date. I think it's like July 8th or something like that.
Yeah, why worry about the date? Right? Yeah. You don't need to know that.
I'm paying for it. So they were here last night, and we were talking about it, and they're going to be sending out their save the date and all that stuff soon. But they're excited, and before that, she's got the. Sports Illustrated right. swimsuit edition. So
we'll be watching.
Yep.
We'll be watching. How hard does he work out, Russ? Hockey players are working out hard. How hard does he off season work out?
He's a fitness guru. He's doing it all and he's always adding stuff. Like he's added Pilates, which I tried once and that's like a total mind scrambler.
Right.
But he'll try and do anything. And he's always been that person that had to work harder. He was a kid who went to UCLA, was redshirted, and he just kept cutting the line when they do drills. And finally the coach is like, who is this guy? Who's this redshirt guy?
Right.
And that's how he got into the lineup was just work. And so right. he's a big kid. Right. He's got to be 235. He has a weight clause in his contract. So I think the lightest he can be is 232 and the heaviest he can be is 238. But yeah. So he stays.
Plays for Minnesota, folks, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, number 54. He's rated as the top three linebackers in the league.
All right. Well, we like to stay in touch with what's going on there.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Cool, man. Cool. Rusty, when a team's going good, I'm going back in some of my old notes. When the team's going good compared to when the team's going bad, what have you seen? You've talked about some of the crazy coaches out there. We love John Tortorella. By the way, speaking of John Tortorella, you know this Naomi Osaka story uh-huh. keeps growing. She pulled out of the French mm-hmm. because she didn't want to do press stuff because
mental health issues.
She says no. So they're not sure what to do. Wimbledon's coming up. There's a pre-tournament that almost everyone plays in. Knicks. She says, no.
No way. She's not going to play.
She says, no, I'm not doing that. Okay. Wow. I don't want to do press conferences. I've always said, Russ, and I think we maybe talked about it. I said, who gives a shit if they do press conferences? They're so lame, right? They're so vanilla. Wow. I know you had said they're obligated to do it, but you never get much out of it. Instead, and especially her, she's so shy, you know, mm-hmm. I always said the guy who should make when he signs a contract, the league should give him an extra mill or two because everyone loves to tune in as John Tortorella when he does his press conferences. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going live. That's Rusty, unbelievable. She's got sponsors. I mean, they're like golfers. They're getting.
It's a growing story, Russ. For sure.
You know, that is unbelievable.
It's going to be totally interesting to see what happens with this thing. you know, with you're right, all sponsors and
yeah,
and
I mean, you're paying like for somebody to go play and be on TV with wearing their equipment and their gear or clothing.
Yeah.
That I wonder what's going to happen. But if she's telling the truth about how it's affecting her mental health, then it doesn't matter about the money. I mean, when you're suffering, all of us out here on that are listening, and you and I know that when you're yeah. When you're depressed, it doesn't matter. Food doesn't taste good. You can't sleep.
Right.
You're in that vanilla mode of, I don't care. I don't care. Nothing matters. And so if she's truly suffering this, maybe she's just saying that, like, I don't, the money, the.
Right.
But I sure hope the sport digs into it, because, you know, this is something they should be helping her, not hurting her. And if she's got these issues and they are just with the media and she can still play, wouldn't you rather have that person do all her business in front of the TV cameras versus after and before to the media?
Yeah. And you know what, the other, if I'm another player, right. And they're going, well, it's unfair. You know, they're saying, you know, the story is it's unfair. She doesn't have to do press con and we do. It's like, ah, that's not that big a deal. I don't give a shit. Let her cater to her. You know, she's number two in the world, and we got to bend the rules a little bit for her. You know, I said, it's not, people are freaking out. Like she comes out and says, I've got mental illness. So what the tennis world is going to do now is they're going to let her start off every game with a, you know, at 15 love. Right? I mean, they're not right. It's not, no. It's like, it's no big deal.
I wonder if they've tried to do something where she's not in person, or are they, is that the way it is right now? Is it all Zoom questions because of COVID? Because I wonder if she could be with her manager and they're just sending her a question. I don't know. I guess they're, you know, because all the players now, it's all Zoom, right? Is that correct? Yeah,
right. With COVID. So it's COVID. You know what I do, Russ? Here's what you do.
Nobody interviews you.
No, here's what you do. So you're the tennis association. You're the people here all up in arms. She says, I'm not doing press conferences. Everyone's freaking out. You know what I do?
What?
No problem. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Okay. That's what I would do. Yeah. That's what I do. It's just, there's no controversy here. She doesn't want to do them. Then she doesn't have to do them.
What if she just did the yes, no game? Like you, yes, no.
No, that's my favorite game. Yeah, I'll have to play
it. Is.
You hate it, but it's a good game.
Can't stand it.
Anyway, I was going to ask you about coaches. What's the funnest thing a coach ever did that you saw when a team goes on a roll? Like say they go 8-0, right? Mm-hmm. And then everything's rolling, and the team's letting you get away with murder. There's probably no curfew, Russ. There's probably lighter skates as compared to. If you're going bad, what's the worst thing you ever went through?
I think just when I played the coaches, you know, letting us have a, if there was a curfew and he said no curfew tonight or you know, maybe day off of practice when you were expecting to practice, just those simple things. Bought the guys, Pat Burns always bought us, a couple beers. We were allowed to drink in the hotel the night before a game. So that we would all meet. Yeah. Well, we'd all meet in the hotel, which was great. Lobby, bar.
Yeah.
And then the whole team would be down there and we'd all decide where we were going for dinner. So we were a very tight team because of that simple rule. Mm-hmm. So we'd have two beers in the lobby bar and then we'd all go for dinner. If wherever guys want Italian, they go there, you know, 10 guys would go there or 5 guys. Sushi, steaks, whatever. And then we would meet back, the dedicated guys, we'd all meet back at that bar before curfew and just have one, maybe the last one.
One corrector.
Yeah. One. No, the corrector, no correctors then.
Corrector's the hangover, isn't it?
Yeah, the hangover. Yeah. And so that was, when I got to Montreal, that was amazing that you could drink in the hotel because not one other team in the league was allowed to drink in the hotel.
And I thought you didn't like Pat Burns. That's a great rule.
No, I mean, we didn't like each other, but I still liked some of the things he did for us as a group. I mean, that was an awesome, but that was a Montreal Canadiens thing. One of the players, It was Jacques Lemaire who coached. As a player, he didn't like to go out, but he wanted to have a couple of beers, and it always bothered him that they couldn't drink in the hotel. So when he became coach, he changed that
right
rule. And when cool. he went to New Jersey, he brought in the same rule.
Smartest move ever by, you know, Slats. I don't know if he invented it or not. You know, he said the problem with putting a team on a curfew, so you got to be back in the hotel by 10:30. Yeah. He said the hassle with that. Is now that keeps you up as the coach. You got to go check. Mm-hmm. You got to go knock on every room door. Yeah. You know, so he goes, that's a bad idea. I want to go to bed. So I guess the move was that became an internationally renowned move by coaches was they pay a kid to stand in the lobby of the hotel with a hockey stick and get all the players to sign it. Russ?
Scotty Bowman started that.
Great idea. Yeah. And of course, the whole idea is he says, bring that stick up to me at 10 after 11.
Yeah.
And then the coach just checks all the names that are on there. So
Yeah. That Brilliant. Was beautiful. Yeah, it was great. Scotty Bowman started that in Montreal. And then I guess that Slats probably heard about it. And I heard a story about Peter Mihovlich was quite the man. And he loved to have a good time. And he got caught out. And he gets on the bus going to practice the day of the game. And Scotty goes, Peter, it's a $200 fine. You weren't in on time for curfew last night. And he whips out his wallet, gives him $200. And he goes, and here's another $200 because I'm not coming in tonight either.
Beautiful.
But there are some good ones.
Well, Gretz has a great one. I think his roommate was Ace Bailey.
Yeah.
And they were racing back to the hotel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gretz says, if you're late, because the coach could be knocking on the door, you were supposed to be, you know, in your skivvies in bed, you know, watching. So he said, as soon as you get in the room, make sure you get the suit off right away, you know. Because if the coach is there and he sees you in your suit, he knows you were. And Ace and Gretz get back to the room. Gretz, you know, gets the gear, gets in his boxers, right? And he's telling him, get your shit off, man. You don't know if he's going to knock at the door. And sure enough, there's a knock at the door, and Ace has all his stuff on. Suit, three-piece suit, winter coat, you know, got no time to regroup. So he dives underneath the covers, okay, of the bed and pulls the covers up to his chin, right? And the coach comes in and goes, what's going on? And Gretz goes, yeah, you know, he's kicking around, but poor Ace here is terrible. He's got a flu or something. You know? he's got the covers up to him, and you can see, okay, so it's about 1,000 degrees. You know, he's got the duvet over him with the winter, and the coach just sits on the edge of the bed and won't leave. You know, he's going, oh, that's too bad. You know, that's terrible. How was the night, boys? Yeah, what do you think of the team? And they look over, and there's more and more sweat pouring down this guy's forehead. And coach gets up and goes, you know what? For a flu, you know what you got to do? You got to crank the heat in the room, okay? And just pile up the heat. And so this guy is sweating to death. And then finally just throws the covers back and goes, okay, I was out late, Chris. funny shit.
That's funny.
What
it
else,
Russ? It was funny. It was funnier the first two times you told that on the show.
Oh my God. Really? is it going to be like that? Is it really going to be like that? Stevie, can we go back and look at the tape? How many times does Russ say, I know I've told this before, but I'll tell it again.
Leave me out of it.
That's a bad road to go. Yeah, Stevie. We'll leave you out of it. That's a bad road to go down. Poor John Rahm.
Oh, that was brutal.
What leading by six, big tournament, leading by six. And they meet him after he puts out on the Saturday and meet him on the course. And everyone got to see it, I guess. I didn't see it, but
come with us.
COVID.
Yeah, it was brutal.
You're done. Right. Awful, Russ.
Yeah.
You don't have much to say about that.
Well, I just think it's bullshit. So anything I say.
What do you think is bullshit, Russ?
Well, he's healthy. He's healthy. He's playing golf. He's outside. He's with his caddy. He's always with his caddy. He's not around anybody. He's not close enough to the other guys. I mean, they're standing on the tee box. Give me a freaking break. I mean, the guy was sick. If he's sick, yeah, but he wasn't. He was tested positive.
I know. I'm just bugging you because you said to me, we're never going to talk politics, and you don't want my angle on this virus.
Do you see all the fans in the stands in the United States, and you see all the no fans in Canada?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I do. Yeah.
You think all those people have taken the shot?
I'll tell you what, Russ, I was so scared when that virus hit because I'm 60. I was a smoker.
Yeah. You know, was? What do you mean? You eat cigarettes.
Was. I quit.
Oh, what?
Yes.
Oh, my God. You should have told us all.
Don't say anything.
We could have shorted freaking Marlboro stock.
I didn't want to. My old man used to say when my mother, who was a huge drinker, and my mom would, you know, get her purse. She'd be walking out the door at 11:30 in the morning. And my mom was a black belt in scotch. And another funny thing my dad would say, my mom's going, okay, I'm just going out for lunch with the girls. I'll talk to you later. And my dad would watch her walk out the door and he'd go, give me the phone, son. And I had my dad the phone and he goes, I'm looking for my stockbroker. Yeah. Hey, Benny, it's Jimmy. Give me 5,000 shares of Seagram's.
Well, you could have shared it with all of us because we could have made some money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen in Alberta, that's not, they didn't clean the air up there. Jimmy just stopped smoking in Edmonton. There's not that red haze.
Oh, stop. Okay. Listen, pal, like I said before, I know I've said this before. When you die, if they cremated you, the fire wouldn't go out.
That's funny.
That's enough. That's enough. What else? Much you're all rusty. I'm loving it. Okay, we talked about it earlier. Everyone kept saying, Russ, at the start of the series, the most lopsided ever was the Leafs against Montreal.
I said it. Yeah. I said it.
Yeah.
So there wasn't
a
chance.
No one has a shot. No. And then you said, even if they get through that, they got no chance against the winner.
And I said what Wendell Clark said to us. They have the best goalie in the league and the top six forwards. And I talked to a couple other people, and they all said the same thing. They were like, Winnipeg is just built to win. They're so good, and they haven't been healthy. And, I mean, they're just proving everybody wrong. I mean, if I read somewhere, there was 52 people in the hockey media that were all wrong on the Leafs. They had them all.
No,
and they
shit.
Had how many games it was going to go? You know, it was how long is the Maple Leaf series, Montreal Canadiens series? How many games and who's going to win it? Was Toronto? Everyone said Toronto. It was just different on games. You know, some were four, some were five, some were six.
Right.
But no,
right.
I don't even think anyone said it would go seven. So I was wrong, and I'm wrong. And if they win this series, I'll be wrong again. But I'll tell you what, they are getting freaking better by the game. They're not the team that we were watching the first two games against Toronto. Not even close. It's like they replaced everybody but kept the same jerseys.
Well, how do you get so good, Russ, when everyone said you got no chance? How do things turn around so fast for these guys?
Well, the confidence that they have right now is amazing.
Right.
Their defense are playing way better, and they're getting better. Like Gallagher, he missed half the year. I don't know exactly. He was gone. He's one of their important players. Mm-hmm. You can tell him he's getting back to his game, and he's getting healthier and better. Just because you've been off for a long time, just because you're cleared to play doesn't mean you're going to just start playing great right in the first game. It's going to take some time to get back into it. And and some of their young players, man, they're playing with confidence that they obviously had, you know, playing in college hockey or juniors, but now we're starting to see it in the NHL. Some of these young guys they have are really coming out of their shell and growing as a player, and it's awesome to watch. I mean, it really is awesome to watch because I was wrong. I mean, I'm admitting I was wrong, and what I'm seeing today is not what I saw a month ago and 2 months ago.
Yeah, and you're the coach, Rusty, of Montreal. Are you saying, you know what, boys? Let her fly. have fun, or are we going, no, let's tighten up, let's really grind, or are we going to have fun and just fucking get 45 shots?
I want all the restaurants and bars to open up in Montreal because I'm not paying for anything. That's what I wanted from the coach. It's an unbelievable city when you're winning there, man. It is. It's crazy. I mean, it's so good. It's unbelievable. But they're just going to keep doing what they're doing. I mean, they're not going to change a thing. They just keep their players rolling. And it's good to see. I applaud Marc Bergevin because, he's done a great job and he made some decisions that people were like, what? What's he doing? And obviously he knew what he was doing and we didn't. And we're starting to see why he made the changes he made.
Yeah. Cool. It's on tonight as we record this. So
we'll know.
I'm loving it. Do you believe in miracles? It could be. If they win, Rusty, maybe we'll have to, if they win everyone the Stanley Cup, maybe we'll have to go to Montreal and do 2 weeks of shows.
Oh my God. I'd love to.
You can show me your old haunts, Rusty.
I love Montreal. It's a great city. I tell all my American friends down here in California, I go, don't go to Europe. Just go to Quebec, go to Montreal, go to Quebec City. A few guys have come back and they said, you're right. Our dollar's strong. Cities are safe and clean. It's close. You're not. And the food is amazing. So,
and if you're single there,
oh boy,
friends. Oh boy. Yeah. St. Catherine Street. Okay. Sign me up. It's like the market in Ottawa. Rusty, let's get out of here, man. Another good week. What's up for you? What are you doing? What are you watching on Netflix? We'd like to know. First of all, what's your series on Netflix?
Well, we're waiting for Yellowstone to come out and Ozarks.
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah.
Ozarks. Waiting for that.
Ozarks. The best.
But been watching a lot of hockey, just watching games and stuff. And my son's home, Lawton. We're playing golf tomorrow at Sherwood.
All right.
Early morning.
Long and straight, Rusty. Tuck the right elbow in when you're coming down, okay? Drive the right elbow into your hip, okay? Okay. Are you left-handed or right-handed?
Right.
Right-handed, okay? There's my tip of the day.
All right.
Okay, everyone, take care. We're going to be back next week with another show. I got a guest. We're lining up a guest.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we're going to get Ken Reed, who does Sportsnet. You probably, I don't know if you watch the Canadian sports networks down there. Ken Reed, longtime host of the evening sports wrap-up. Written a couple of books. Great guy. Friend of mine. Tons of stories. And we're trying to line them up for the next week or two. So
great.
Tune in then. Rusty, you get back to doing what you're doing, okay?
Yeah.
Or return your empties. You can make a bunch of money.
Okay. They go right into the recycle bin.
They probably think when your wine's out there, Russ, all the bottles of wine.
When I go away for the summer, the first week, they're probably thinking, what happened to Mr. Cortnell?
Yeah. Listen, you know what I'm saying, glass houses, but if you want to build one, go over to Cortnell's and grab the empties. We'll talk to you later, Rusty. Take it easy, brother.
See you, pal.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Cortnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.